Hello, and welcome to Manga Splaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who have not read manga before. Hosted by myself, David Brothers, Deb Aoki, Chris Butcher, and Chip Zdarsky, you can follow along with our reading list at mangasplaining.com. And this week, I'm hosting because Chip chose one of my books that, in hindsight, I might have slightly misrepresented when I pitched it as Garth Ennis doing Sesame Street. But it's called Wave Listen to Me. By Hiroaki Samura, who's known for Blade of the Immortal, probably first and foremost in North America. And he's sort of known for having a very ornate and detailed art style. Blade of the Immortal had tons of really intricately drawn moments of murder and sword fighting that were really impressive. And I described Wave Listen to Me as Garth Ennis doing Sesame Street after Preacher because Blade of the Immortal, horrifically violent. Epic story. The sexy parts were kind of gross and violent as well. And Wave Listen to Me is a drama about a radio station. So it's sort of a complete 180 in terms of content and approach. And essentially, there's a 20-something woman, Minari Kota, who breaks up with her boyfriend and through a ridiculous series of events ends up ranting about her boyfriend on the radio and somehow parlays that into a job at a radio station thanks to a slightly untrustworthy radio producer. And I chose it because it's so... I never saw comics like this when I was a kid. Like, I know Love and Rockets existed, and that's sort of like about anything and everything, but stuff like this, I didn't really have a chance to be exposed to. And for it to come from someone who'd been doing adventure comics and like really violent adventure comics at, beforehand, like there's some kind of interesting texture in there for me. And I think I want to start with Deb in terms of getting some takes on what you thought about the book. Deb, how was Wave Listen to Me?
Oh, I really enjoyed it. Just because it's... I've been to Hokkaido a couple of times and I've had soup curry and I've been to some of the Susukino and all those places. So it was kind of like, oh, you know, Hokkaido flavor, right? Mm-hmm. But also, I enjoyed the character, Minare's. She's just really... rambunctious, really.
Yeah,
says stuff, whatever comes to her mind, and she's when she's kind of like I could relate to that feeling, right? You know, like you're looking for your 20s, you're looking for love, you break up, and you just get like screw it, and you just want to drink yourself blind and start like ranting and stuff like that. And the way that she rants about relationships and her crappy job and stuff like that, I thought, yeah, he's got this right.
Yeah.
Although then, but you know, I'll confess that I have not read Blade of the Immortal before because the length of that series is intimidating.
Mm-hmm. 26 volumes, I believe.
Yeah.
Jesus. Yeah.
Wow.
And so it's kind of this dense samurai supernatural drama, which can be a little hard to follow in the big early volumes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was never really a big fan of his work. So when I checked out Wave Listen to Me, it's like, oh my God, this is funny.
Yeah.
It's weird and funny and unexpected. Mm-hmm. I mean, the way that the stories go. Like there's that story in the second volume. Chip, did you get to read much more than one volume?
I just read the first volume, but please feel free to spoil it for me.
There's a part in the second volume where it starts to take like a ghost story tinge. That's mm-hmm. not a ghost story. Like there's blood dripping from the ceiling and they're trying to figure out why there's blood dripping from the ceiling.
Was that the story with the bear?
That's the story with the apartment downstairs.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So... It's really hard to describe what this book is about because it just turns on a dime and goes in all kinds of directions, but it's entertaining, fun to read.
Yeah. The first sentence of the copy online is Minari is tired of men, she's tired of work, and she's tired of being told she's too old to be single. And that only comes up like once in the book. And I do want to mention, translated by Adam Hirsch and lettered by Darren Smith. And this has so many different pop culture references to Japanese culture, or references to Japanese culture, I should say, not pop culture references, that it must have been a doozy to translate. But Chip, what did you think about Wave Listen to Me?
I really liked it. Yeah, it was continuously surprising. Like, mm-hmm. I obviously didn't know anything about Blade of the Immortal, so the Garth Ennis Sesame Street thing I didn't quite catch until you've just explained it now. Yeah, the translation actually fascinated me. The fact that they retained all of the local references and
just explained,
just explained it to the reader, but in kind of a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that, because they could have kind of bent over backwards to try and like North Americanize it, I guess, or just get rid of those references. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they kept it made it a fun and educational, which I liked.
Yeah,
I was super charmed by it, and I love the main character, and I love her kind of her brashness. Also because it didn't, sometimes when you have a brash character like that, who just kind of says what they think, it can mm-hmm. be really annoying, but you never really felt that with her character, which is a really tricky thing to pull off for a writer. So I was surprised at that. Right away, too, looking at it, the art was gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
And the boss, is it Kanetsugu?
Kanetsugu, yeah.
Kanetsugu? I see exactly where Becky Cloonan gets her men from. Because when they meet in the bar, I'm like, oh, that's a Becky Cloonan drawing. Wait a second. I know that guy.
I don't think I noticed that, but absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So the R was a really great, and then every once in a while it would falter, and it was only in those moments where I was like, oh, yeah. Like, there's like 8 volumes of this.
Mm-hmm.
The artist and possibly assistants are moving pretty fast. And once in a while, there's like the shortcuts that kind of like pull me out a bit. But the great drawings just make up for it so much, and especially the environments. Like this rivals Akira in terms of the environments, weirdly enough.
I can see it.
Because of the use of perspective. Because he always does a thing. And, you know, in North America, Stuart Immonen does this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more than others, but the use of a subtle 3-point perspective, where when you're looking at a room, all the vertical lines taper down just slightly. It gives you just that weird extra feeling of depth, and it's really hard to pull off too, because once you pass the horizon line, mm-hmm. that all gets super wonky.
Like this the scene where they're at the table, they all sort of get together, and you can really see that there's like almost a fisheye thing going on with that illustration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fisheye, but it's like, it's almost any establishing shot has that slight third perspective, which really elevates the drawings.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it from the art standpoint. I loved it from the story standpoint. You know, the only time I was just like, there were a few moments where I was confused by some of the references. Like when he pulls out the coin that's pixelated.
Oh yeah. It's basically Pokemon. Watch.
Okay, yeah. I didn't quite get what was happening there.
Yeah.
There were a couple of things like that would trip me up once, which is surprising since they did have all the footnotes. And that one, I was just like, oh, I have no idea.
I think they assumed that since it was a comic, whoever was reading it would know that about this video game.
But they didn't expect me.
They didn't see Chip coming.
I mean, I'll be honest, Yo-Kai Watch was super duper popular in Japan, but never quite caught on here as much. So in Japan, it's super, even for, I think, American readers, like to see this little Yo-Kai Watch coin, that might be a little obscure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then doing the mosaicing it out so you don't get sued for showing the trademark.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah.
The guy that she works with at the curry soup place, Nakahara, he was kind of my stumbling block because he's such a creep, but he's weirdly isn't presented as such. Like everyone just kind of like glosses over like these things he's saying.
Yeah.
He's so earnest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't know. It's part of the kind of weird magic realism of these kind of stories. It, all the other characters overlook this, but I definitely didn't care for that character. It's one of those guys where you're just like, I guess I should want to know where his story ends up, but I don't.
Yeah.
Like, I want him to like catch the next bus out of Hokkaido and find a new life.
Yeah.
Pledging his love for women. But yeah, like this is the kind of book that I keep coming back to this with this podcast where we read these books and I'm just like, oh, maybe I want to do that. Maybe I want to incorporate that into my work.
But this awesome.
This really hit home because like I keep thinking about North American comics and, you know, everything's got to have this weird catch to it. Like, oh, they're vampires. Oh, they're superheroes. Oh, they're superhero vampires, which is my next book. But
yeah.
But like, I just kind of want to tell a story about a cast of characters going through life. And mm-hmm. and this does that so well. And the fact that it crosses over between the radio station where the writer artist has clearly done their work. Like they understand the mechanics of all of that, but they also clearly understand the mechanics of the restaurant too. It's like, there's like four different manga happening within this one manga.
Yeah.
This, as soon as they started focusing on like this recipe and stuff and like the intergenerational thing, I was like, oh, now is this a food manga? Is that what we're dealing with now? It's not a radio manga, relationship manga. Like it's, yeah, it's a lot. And, I was, you know, spoilers. I was, I almost laughed when after 200 pages, it's like, all right, time to start my job.
Yeah.
Which is the premise of the book. I'm like, oh yes, manga. Now I understand.
Yeah. You can see why people got so upset at decompression in the early 2000s.
Yeah, I know. but it made me want to keep reading. So I think this is one of the series I'm definitely going to come back to just to see where it goes.
Nice.
Especially with, yeah, the creepy boss, Becky Cloonan character.
Chris, what was your take?
I actually can't believe that this was published.
My main take. This Bandit Silk Filth, Chris Butcher, 2021. Yeah.
Japanese manga I have ever read in English. The fact that they didn't localize anything, like pop star names, including like old pop stars that are no longer relevant or radio personalities. Soup curry is just never explained what soup curry is. And like, I've been to Hokkaido a lot, like a lot. And I've only had soup curry, I think, twice, and only then, like, the first time was 2 or 3 years ago. They don't explain that. They don't explain why this soup curry place also seems to make all of the breads of the world. Like, there's just, these are just, like, little things, but the whole book feels very much designed for the audience that reads it in Japan, and not necessarily designed for a Western audience. I was kind of convinced that this is the first one Chip that you were going to bounce off of 100% because it does seem obtuse at times to me. And I have a real insight to a lot of Japanese culture from like actively studying it for work. So even
those obtuse moments, like they're a little bit of set decoration. There's stuff that would like, surely enhance it for me, but it doesn't rely on it to tell you the story. Like, I don't know what soup curry is.
It's my deep regret that we didn't go.
It's a curry flavored soup.
But I can,
talked at once.
I can put it together in my brain that it's something to do with curry and soup, and that it's probably delicious. And
it's pretty
good. And it's a Hokkaido. Like they explained that part that it's from the Hokkaido region. Mm-hmm. So that's all I need. I don't need to know how it tastes. I don't need to know. You know how much it costs, or if it's a true delicacy. It gives you enough to be able to follow the story and enjoy the story, which is great. And you learn things as you go along, which I think is something that, you know, I could probably stand to do more of in the work that I put out.
Yeah,
it's so nice to hear because, like, a lot of manga doesn't come over to America or doesn't get picked for publication because people think it's too Japanese. Or that people who aren't deeply marinated in Japanese culture would think, what is this? But I'm so pleased to hear that, you know, that you could still follow the story and find it enjoyable.
I mean, it's still a story about a young woman who's fed up with her love life and her job in a restaurant. Like,
is this true?
Like, these are all, it's all still relatable. I'm not like, what is this strange land where people have jobs and relationships?
So radio
that don't
is
work.
This old thing that people used to have.
Yeah, well, there is that part. Like, the fact that it's, you know, radio feels like a bit of a throwback. I'm surprised that it's a current series, right? Like
it's coming out now. I think like chapter 64 just came out a couple weeks ago.
You don't have to, spoilers or whatever. I'm assuming, David, you're relatively caught up on it.
I'm up to volume 4. So a little behind, but not too far behind.
Do they address the internet?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I was wondering if that was going to happen.
It's one of those things where it's not like a hipster thing. It's like radio is where you can go and get your hands dirty compared to everywhere else.
Yeah.
Because only old people really care about it, I guess.
Yeah.
She did kind of mention that where she was like, it's radio, so it doesn't even matter. It's kind of, it's kind of like making a podcast.
But everybody knows it. Like in this world, everybody knows it because all of her customers, start posting about it.
I would say radio has a slightly different place in Japan than it does in North America. I actually listened to the radio in the car for the first time today. I was doing some errands and, I was like, oh, yeah, this was a thing. I am listening to music that someone else is choosing for me instead of a curated Spotify list that I go in and decide on. That's interesting. But I think it is more present, maybe, in my experiences in Japan. It could be, especially talk radio. There's a ton, speaking of podcasts, there's just a ton of Japanese language podcasts that are radio and advice and things like this that I found out about from Jocelyn, who listens to them, and Jocelyn Allen, who's a translator, who's kind of all of our friend. And you would never know, right? Like we were kind of in an English bubble, but that's why it's so weird. So this actually came out in 2015, this volume of manga, and we actually just got the first volume in May of last year, of 2020, and they will have released 5 volumes in the course of 1 year to try and catch up. So it really isn't the kind of manga that tends to get released in North America, and I was actually really, it did so well in France. I think they kind of had no choice. It actually won a big translation award and it was doing really well. And Samura still has a big fan base here in North America. But yeah, I'll be honest in terms of what I thought.
There's an anime too.
There's an anime. Well, that probably didn't hurt. But the anime starts with the bear story, like midway through another volume. Like it starts very in media res and then flashes back to the events of this episode a little bit at a time, which I think is a very wise choice, because quite honestly, after the first chapter, I wasn't sold. If we hadn't been doing this podcast, I wouldn't have read it. I would have been just like, nah, it's fine, but it's not for me. That's too bad. But I'm glad I did finish it out. I think it ends in a very good place, but there are, it's just such a, it's a mess. Like, I honestly think that it's a mess in this first volume. Like, he keeps, the boss keeps, mentioning this old-timey, actress that the Minare kind of reminds him of. And every time she's about to be like, what are you talking about? Some convenient plot point makes it so that they don't actually finish up on that. And it's just we're going to make a plan to get together. If at 30, we're both not married, straight out of Friends, if at 30, we're both not married and you have a restaurant, I'll come work with you. And it's just he's throwing a lot at the wall in this first volume.
The boss and the actress bit felt like a comedy bit to me.
Yeah. Same.
Because it's so she's like, oh, whatever about this. Like we'll talk about this at some other point. Like it's such a funny,
You keep thinking it's going to turn moving and it never gets to the moving part. It's almost like a Shaggy Dog joke.
Yeah. It's like someone being like, oh, but there is that thing about the actress. And that just kind of keeps coming up. It's like, no, we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny.
I don't know. I got to the afterword and I'm like, oh yeah. Okay. Where the author writes an afterword. There are times when even I, the writer, question just what kind of manga this is. So I can only imagine how you, the readers, must feel. My editor told me, let's do a story about love and radio. But by the end of volume 1, putting the radio aspect aside, I was shocked to realize the romance component made up maybe 1% of the whole book. It is not. He's a really, really good comics creator. Samura is amazing. He's got thousands of pages under his belt when he gets to this volume, and it's kind of fun honestly to just see him kind of dicking around and feeling trying to figure out what this story is going to be. Mm-hmm. And I think he does. But yeah, she doesn't start start the job on the radio till the last page of this book. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting. I feel like I learned a lot, weirdly enough, about different ways that the culture interacts. And I like Hokkaido. I don't mind writing a story there set there at all. And it's beautiful. Like, there are just so many pages that are really beautiful. Mm-hmm. But it is a badly put together first volume. And I absolutely would have bounced off of it. I absolutely would have bounced off of it were it not for this podcast. But now I finished it and I feel pretty good about that. I would like to read volume two.
Please read volume two, because volume two
keep going.
It starts, it goes on the on-ramp and it starts picking up speed.
That's great.
You can tell with volume one that he's figuring out the story he wants to tell, mm-hmm. but each step is fun and interesting. So I actually don't mind it.
Yeah.
That's kind of a part of the process.
Yeah.
So I can see how you bounce off of it. But for me, that kind of just added to it. The fact that I'm just like, oh, it's this. Oh, no, it's this. Oh, but what about that? But what about this? Like, because by the end, I was like, oh, okay. Like, he set all these pieces up. This whole volume was about setting up all these pieces. And that's what makes me want to get to volume two to see how he starts paying them off.
Yeah.
Was it, though? Like, or did was it just... let's put this in and see if this goes anywhere. And then it kind of does. Like, so many starts and stops.
I think it is definitely sort of cut like a music video where every scene is either three pages long or eight. You know, there's like no medium length scenes. It's cutting very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But I think that pace kind of benefits it in the graphic novel form, because I flew through this volume. Mm-hmm. It was such a fast read and still very dense at the same time. But I actually first saw this series in 2017. I had to look on Twitter to go back and find when I first started talking about it. But it was serialized on Crunchyroll's manga app at the time.
That's where it's been
coming out monthly since then. And I found the page that convinced me I was going to keep reading it, which I think is in chapter 3 or 4, when she finds out that she's not like a very neat drunk and she's been...
Yeah, that was really funny.
That's the thing.
Yeah. It's actually funny. He pulled the rug out in a really good way with that. You should explain it just for the listeners a little bit.
Yeah. So early in the very first chapter, she gets drunk and then there's like a flash to her sleeping in bed, like topless, face down, where she's like, this always happens. But she explains that she comes home, she puts her shoes very carefully, like in the doorway, like she folds her clothes, yada yada yada. And then like 100 pages later, you find out that she's actually been coming home drunk, getting into her neighbor's apartment. And then her neighbor, this poor, long-suffering man, takes her up to her apartment, like sorts out her clothes, like puts her in bed. And she just thought that she was responsible the entire time. And it's such a good comedic bit, because it goes from her like sleeping on the ground, being like kind of talking to herself, to this guy lifting her up. You're like, whoa, who is this guy? And she does like a Frankensteiner from wrestling and slams him on the ground and calls the cops. And the very next panel is her apologizing to him and the police.
That was great. That was my favorite part.
Killed me.
It's
pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Like, I knew he could draw. I didn't realize he was this funny.
It must have been something coming. Like, if you were a fan of the Blade of the Immortal, I can't even imagine the whiplash that you must have had discovering this.
It's weird. It's like, I can't even really explain how weird it is to go from Blade to this, because it's so, there's no hook. Like, there's nothing special. There's nothing supernatural. It's like, oh, people like radio and she's really good at talking trash. Like, that's it.
And then there's these asides, like the talking turtles.
Yes, I love the turtles.
Yes.
That turtle reveal, that turtle instruction reveal was actually the funniest joke in the book for me. Where she's like, oh, the turtles are here, and there's the tiny note, and then she opens it up, and then they give it a full page, and I'm just like dying laughing.
It's great. So it said so much about the character, the roommate. I forget her name. Mizuho. Yeah, it's a joke, but it also reveals character, which is like the best kind of joke in a book like this, right? And yeah, the more we talk about it, the more I think about it. Like, I think this is a brilliant volume.
Yeah,
I think there's so much done here, and there's so many interesting things that are set up for the rest of the series that I'm definitely going to follow up with it.
Yeah, I think the emotional acting, like the actual acting of the characters as opposed to like the fighting and that kind of thing, is really strong as well. Mm-hmm. Like when they're in Mizuho's apartment and they're both drinking together, they both have very different postures.
Yeah.
You know, like Minari's trying to look very like older and like wise beyond her years, and Mizuho's very excited and leaning forward.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's so good. Yeah, this is a solid recommendation.
When did you know that you liked the book? Was there a moment or a page for everyone? We can start with Chip.
I liked it from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
Once you realize what's happened to her, when they start playing her words on the radio and she like storms to the station, that's when I was like, oh, okay, this is gonna be this kind of a story.
Yeah.
And I was in. You know, the turtle thing was great. You know, the reveal of the neighbor stuff was fantastic. I was in from the get-go, and kind of as it went on, I was actually impressed. Like, you know, I kind of made fun of the fact that it ends with her starting her job or saying yes to the job.
Mm-hmm.
But I was actually impressed that they didn't even get to it until that point. Like, there was so much to talk about and so many characters introduced and so many situations that it's like, oh, like holding off on the meat of your story for that long and still have it be wildly interesting. Like, I haven't even met people at the radio station yet, except for like a couple of characters. Like, mm-hmm. the fact that that's going to be a whole thing, the fact that she's starting from the bottom too, because you know that it's going to be that kind of story where it's like, oh yeah, she's got the 3 a.m. slot. But I haven't read ahead, but I have a feeling she's going to do well, and she's going to make her way up at some point. And I love those stories. I love the kind of like climbing up from the bottom. Yeah, yeah. I wholeheartedly disagree with Christopher Butcher. I think the more I think about it, the more I think this is an amazing, perfect first volume of a manga series. And I'm an expert in manga, don't forget.
It's true. Chris, how about you?
I was probably, yeah, the turtle scene, which is pretty far along when she moves in with her coworker. Mm-hmm. I think was the moment where I was like, okay, I think I like, there is going to be, that's it. I don't see a page number here. There are not page numbers. Oh, there's one. So that's at like 120 pages through the book, where I'm like, okay, there's going to be some narrative through here where like the entire, the first like five or six chapters, I felt like the entire tone and like everything about the story, what the story was going to be, was changing completely from chapter to chapter. It felt really, unbalanced to me, I guess. But as soon as she gets into the apartment and she's going to have some sort of, like, there is going to be some sort of regularity, that's when I was like, okay, yeah, I get this. And by the end, I was like, yeah, I want to see what happens next for sure. But yeah, those first few chapters I found were like, that's the thing. Like, they weren't even bad. No, this is the problem. Not the problem. This is the problem of manga. Air quotes on problem. Pretend I...
You have to say air quotes on both sides, otherwise the entire podcast will be an air quote.
Isn't it? The problem with manga is we only get the stuff that, for the most part, like 99.9% of what's published here is kind of the best of the crop of what's being released in Japan. There's so much more being released in Japan than we can get here, than we'll ever get here.
And lots of crappy isekai, let's admit it.
Yeah. lots of crappy isekai. Lots of, like, even Shonen Jump. We're not even getting every Shonen Jump series, because there's gag series and four-panel comics and all kinds of stuff that don't get translated that are in Weekly Jump if you buy the print edition. And those, they're not even bothering with that for World Jump. And that's just the way it is. Like, there's just some stuff that's very specific to Japan that comes out of a cultural and artistic tradition of manga in Japan that would be difficult to translate. So, yeah, and Samura in particular, even within Japan, is just good. Like, he's really, really good. So the fact that he did five chapters of a manga that's trying to find its feet, it's still... You get to read 100 pages of Samura manga. There are a lot worse things that you could do on either side of the Pacific. Yeah, I think that that's like the whole thing with like the curry restaurant and opening up a stall at the fair under a different name, and like you find out that actually that's nothing. None of that made any difference at all to the story. He's already surpassed. And then the like girl who comes in and volunteers at work for like supporting her brother who injured the owner of the curry shop. That doesn't go anywhere. Like it's, and I don't think, I don't know, maybe it does.
Oh, it does?
It does.
It's clearly set up. Like it's not like anything's getting wrapped up in volume one.
Something like that happens every single chapter for the first five chapters. None of it gets resolved and it just keeps shifting and shifting and shifting. If you read that in a Western comic book, would you feel as generously towards it?
If this was
that's true. Volume one of a new Image book or whatever, I'd be over the moon.
Like I don't think it'd get a volume two. I think if you got six issues of this, where it's just like completely random, and she doesn't even like the premise that's on the back of the book isn't explored in the book until the very last page, I don't think it'd get a second volume. I think the American market is so cutthroat right now.
It is extremely well told chaos, which reflects the main character's life.
Okay,
that makes it all just kind of make sense for me going through. And like, you know, you mentioned the mysterious young woman who comes in to help the restaurant. And like that clearly going somewhere because she's taking over all these areas of the restaurant and doing them much better than the main character. Like
the page of her looking at the blog was extremely good.
Oh, that was so good.
It's such a great use of space. Just that blog and just like that. It's a side view of her just looking
at the fact that this girl just comes in and does her job way better than her. I've already updated the blog. She goes, you did what? And she just looks at the screen like, like this, the girl who just came out of nowhere writes way better blog posts about bread and curry than she does. And she's like,
because that's the only thing she's good at. Deb, when did it click for you? Was there a moment?
Oh, I love this part where she hears herself on the radio and when she's in the restaurant. Mm-hmm. And then she says, she drops everything and says, I'm going down to that radio station right now. So she goes there and then she grabs the mic at a certain point and she says, Mitsuo, even if it's run to the ends of the earth, I will hunt you down and kill you. And then at the last panel of that chapter, it says, there's a guy and a girl and he says, Mitsuo from Fukuoka, what are the chances, huh?
Yeah, that was a good joke.
That joke's also really good in the anime.
her running from the restaurant also brings up another one of my favorite parts, which is the later reveal that she's also kind of a YouTube star because people filmed her running out of the restaurant.
there are so many... Like, I couldn't choose my the point where it clicked this time since it's a reread for me. But a point that I appreciated a lot was around page 56 when she first gets the offer of a radio job and immediately Googles the salary and starts talking trash to her boss.
Because he's like, she thinks, oh, God, I got this radio job, right? So she's like, you know, telling her boss, like, ha ha, you know, I'm going to quit. And then she finds out how much she's going to make and she's like, how about I just work like take a pay cut. Yeah.
Because there's a trope in manga where the person with the upper hand will appear bigger than the other person. Mm-hmm. So like Spider-Man very small down here, like Kingpin up like this. Yeah. That happens in Fist of the North Star. It happens in JoJo's. And it happens here where she's looming over her boss and like using his name really familiarly. Mm-hmm. And then you see her shrink. And it's such a good use of the comic's form.
Yeah.
Especially in such a realistic looking manga. Like it's clearly drawn, it's cartooned, but it's rooted in real life in a way that you wouldn't think you could get away with a lot of like cartoony hijinks.
Yeah.
But they do constantly. They're like the screaming, the fighting, the flashbacks.
But it's not drawn in a goofy way. It's just like people yelling.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's impressive that it maintains a style and is able to kind of float back and forth between that kind of the realism and the cartooniness and have it feel still unified. Like clearly they know how to create a comic.
Yeah.
The weird part about it is it's like, you know, I'm so used to his style, which is very scratchy and very moody. Mm-hmm. And have it with such funny content.
Yeah.
I'm so used to seeing this style of drawing and these type. He draws wonderful women.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not tied up and
right.
being, you know.
Blade of the Immortal gets really unpleasant for like 5 volumes.
Okay, all right.
it's kind of like the Die Wargeller, which I cannot mm-hmm. pronounce. I was flipping through that, and it's the kind of S&M, BDSM scenes.
Yeah, very much so.
Are like almost like Tagame intense. Like
yeah.
violent, like, oh.
Yeah, I will say, if you like the art in the book, do not check out his art books, which are full of very beautiful drawings of horrible things.
All right, good to know.
Yeah,
it's kind of fascinating that, based on that, that this is something that he's decided to devote years of his life to.
Yeah, it's fairly clean. Like, there are a few moments where it's like, oh, that's like a really good drawing of feet, and that makes me feel weird.
Because that's one of his things. Here, this is another quote from the afterword by the author.
Yeah.
I'm getting older, so I feel it's about time I tone it down with the torture porn and parody stories, and this manga is the result of that compulsion.
He's so funny!
It's
great. Imagine having that thought. Imagine sitting back one day and going, you know what?
No more torture porn.
No more torture porn.
You know, props to the translator, man.
Yeah, this one illustration of the girl sitting with her feet, like, just in the camera, and, like, the sides of her bum's kind of Scarlett Johansson in Lost in Translation. I was like, oh, I know what that drawing is. I know why that's there.
But I think all of this, like, all the stuff that Chris mentioned that adds up for, like, a very bumpy read made it really kind of thrilling for me, because I couldn't see what was coming next.
Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah.
I could not see what was coming next.
And sometimes because it was ridiculous and like literally unforeseen, like no one would say, oh, the sister of the guy who hit the owner would come work here. But it's such a good twist that you're like, okay, we're doing like the melodrama thing. Like I'm into it.
Yeah. But even the characters comment, it's really weird that the sister of the guy who hit the boss has come to work here. Like that's not even Japanese melodrama. That's like, no, this is weird. This is like, and that's it. The characters are pointing out a plot contrivance. And that's another thing that knocked me out of the story a little bit, where it was just like, this is, I don't know about, and anyway, maybe
but
she
I feel
works
like
for
that's
a rival
going
curry
somewhere.
Firm. I don't know.
Is that not going somewhere?
It's going
no,
somewhere.
No, Deb says it's going somewhere.
Yeah, it is going somewhere.
Yeah, the characters were echoing what we're thinking, but also, yeah, keep an eye on her because this is weird. Like, something's up here. But they also need the help, so it's like, you know.
Rocking a hard place.
Can I also point out, too, the fact that she created this, what was it, rolled tapioca pudding into bite-sized pieces and fried them?
Yeah.
They call it popping flour. I want that so bad.
Right.
What is like, that?
Like that's just a casual thing that is dropped into the story. I'm like,
that was so amazing because I thought about that too. That how does she do this?
Yeah,
how do you fry tapioca pudding. That's amazing.
Do you freeze it? That sounds. Yeah, actually, you know what? I feel like I got by a lot of this. Where a lot of the stuff that. Well, other than the podcast and having to talk about it tonight, I feel like my familiarity with a lot of the Hokkaido stuff, because I have really good friends, Keith and Mino, if you're listening, I love you, that live in Hokkaido. Oh, you guys met them when we were in... We all went to Hokkaido together, which makes this extra weird. But
we had Genghis
but,
Khan.
I had, like, the stuff that I love about Hokkaido is all in this book. So that was actually really nice, that part of it. And that's one of the things that maybe kept me going as well, was the fact that it's like, it's spending time in a place that I can't spend time right now in the real world. So
it
was
name
good.
Drops real places. Like, when it talks like, oh, you know, she brought this high-end manju from this store. It's like, I want to go there. That sounds yummy.
It's funny, when I was reading this, I wondered if David recommended it partly because it took place in Hokkaido, knowing that that's like one of the only things that I have any kind of connection to because we went there.
It's a happy coincidence.
Happy coincidence, okay.
Yeah. I do want to get into the creepy coworker. Because I feel like he's a trope that comes up in manga and anime pretty frequently, which is like this really motivated, like the love declaration guy. And you're going to get married because he wants to get married that bad. But she's so not into it that it becomes a weird running joke where he's like, all right, I'm going to get my restaurant and then we'll fall in love and marry. And she's like, great, I will work in your restaurant, and leaves it at that. So I think that I missed, he was definitely annoying, but I think the creepy subtext was kind of lost on me because I'm so used to this kind of guy showing up.
He's so stuck in the friend zone, he doesn't even know. He's in such denial that he's in the friend zone.
But then there's the thing with him and the mysterious new girl too, which is like kind of a nice little beginning of a plot for future volumes.
Sure, and the thing with him and the gay boss, and the thing with we could do this like literally every five pages has got a new, maybe they'll follow up on that in the future kind of moment. And I mean
he has the world's best radar.
Glad you like it, and I am on board with it at the end of the volume, but I would
feel upset as irate as Chris is.
Furious.
If this volume were two or three volumes. Because if I read half of this in volume one and then went to volume two and got the other half of this, and at the end she's starting the radio station and all these things have been started, I'd be like, mm-hmm. oh, come on. Like, we have to kind of, we gotta go somewhere. But this all felt like this great setup for volume two.
Mm. It's interesting. This is something that that's by and about adults.
Mm. Yeah.
Yep,
it's
yep.
not about teens, or it's not like mystical or whatever. And maybe
there's
that's
not even a
reason.
Token little kid for you to feel like, oh, cute.
Yeah.
Turtles are the closest thing.
The turtles.
<Yeah.
laughs> And Mitsuho, right?
Yeah,
she's very pure.
Yeah.
Do you think the book is sympathetic to the main character? Like, she's a hot mess, and I think it's super obvious like that she's a mess, but do you think the book punishes her for that?
Well, then is it torture porn again as well? Is that
it doesn't punish her yet because things are looking good for her.
Mm-hmm.
Like even things that kind of go wrong aren't like big setbacks.
Yeah.
Because they turn out to be good things. Like, you know, she packs up everything on her back to go live in the storage room of the radio station. Mm-hmm. But then she ends up with this delightful roommate. With a clean place, like it's that kind of story where she's kind of fucked up, but then she ends up in a good position.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I didn't get that feeling from it.
There was one joke in there. You mentioned jokes kind of revealing character being really good. When she has the big backpack on her back and she's like, it weighs like 40 pounds. Mm-hmm. She mentions that she took her entire collection of glass masks, which is a shoujo manga. Like, it's full of comic books.
Yes.
And that says a lot about who she is and what she prioritizes.
And also, what better way to get your reader to love your main character than have them carting all their manga around with them?
And it's a ridiculously over-the-top dramatic manga. Like an old-school, over-the-top, crazy dramatic.
It's like iconic shoujo, right? Like Galaxy Eyes and everything.
Yeah, it's about a glass mask. It's about a girl who becomes an actress. And whenever she kind of gets in the zone of like being in the character, her eyes go blank.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Riveting.
It's interesting that there's this mysterious actress character mentioned in this first volume. Maybe there's a connection there.
Mm, I could see that.
Mm. Chris does not
interesting
see
development.
I'm sure it'll show up again in volume 9 or 10.
I mean, the glass mask thing was just kind of a throwaway detail.
Yeah, it was just a gag.
It was just so funny. Like, you know, the throwaway detail, like what to feed the turtles.
Yeah.
And then she's saying, turtles are so amazing. You know, they can eat food that has been, that's been water that's filled with their own poop. And it's like, that's right.
Yeah.
Like the Japanese government, was it? Yeah.
Oh my god.
Terrible joke. And I actually really liked that joke. And sorry, I didn't dislike any of this. I just didn't like how it didn't come together, maybe. But like, that joke was so good because you could totally hear just like the Japanese government. And then she looks around and she's like, oh, right, there's no one here to laugh at my joke. How am I going to be on radio? I'm never going to have any feedback at all. Like, that was good. Like a joke revealing character. Absolutely. That was a good one. And again, he's just so talented and it's interesting to see him directing it. Towards something like this, as opposed to his last few projects, where it's the torture porn,
and seeing her try to get better at her job I guess, well, at her prospective job, by like being like, how do people do this on the radio? Let me listen to the radio more often. It's sort of like a subtle way to show her studying, but it's like a couple panels a chapter, so it doesn't get in the way. It's just sort of like a subplot, I suppose.
Yeah, it's not a training montage or anything. It's just like you kind of drop hints of it here and there.
Yeah,
that's not very manga, though, is it?
No, it's not. Usually, it's so much more overt. Grown up,
though, isn't it? I mean, there's this part where she says, "Oh yeah, you know, like getting a sponsor for my radio show. It's like maybe $500 or something like that." And then the Nakahara looks at him like, spoken like a person who has never had a real job, you know.
Yeah.
Very grown up humor, and it's not grown up in a lewd kind of way, but grown up like, yeah, that's a grown up joke.
Yeah.
I think part of the reason why I recommended this was that it fits in sort of a similar category as Sex Criminals to me, where it's comics for adults by adults. And there's like an edge to both series, a different edge, but both series have an edge, I suppose.
Now you're speaking to me. All right. Yeah, this is great. You're right.
But it's like, imagine all the good parts of like Spider-Man comics, where it's like his relationships, his job, and this is just that.
Yeah. No, it's I love it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Does anybody else have any other comments? Anything we want to tackle?
This feels like the first time we've had one person either
stop
on the
singling
fence,
me out, you asshole.
or having it be a not recommend. Which I think is great, like, you know, because these can't all be like, yeah, this is great. What's the next one?
Super positive.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so healthy. I was convinced you guys would hate, you know, What the Font, honestly.
Mm.
So I recommended that to explaining people things. Since we did the really? Podcast last week. Yeah. I've encountered people that have been like, I just read this manga, What the Font, and you do design, you should read that. And they're like, yeah, I know, I've heard about it. And it's good. I think after that episode airs, everyone's going to be.
I hope so.
I don't know. How would you recommend this? Here's a question I have for the group. Other than Garth Ennis doing Sesame Street after Preacher ends, how would, now that you've read the first volume, would you still recommend it the same way to somebody else? Like, because it does do that thing where the premise of the book doesn't get really going until the last page and into volume two. And this is the other thing. You very specifically bounced off of manga a little bit, where it was like, yeah, I'm going to have to read 6 volumes of this to get the story. I'm going to have to read 12 volumes of this to get the story with the first few that we were doing. Whereas this is one that's like, you don't even get the story until the end. It's just like dicking around in a fun way, but you're more on board with it. I'm really shocked.
I got tons of story in this. Like, I think that's we're coming at it from different angles. I think, like, for me, this was a lot of story. Like, I don't necessarily need it to be the premise of the book. The premise of the book is this character and her chaotic life and the people that surround her, and all these divergent stories that have her somewhat as the nexus of it. Her getting the radio show, like, I don't know, I might bounce after she kind of starts doing that. Like, maybe that won't interest me, but this stuff has interested me. I can't think of people I wouldn't recommend this to. Like, especially if they're into, like, when I think of a North American audience, I think of Saga, where you have like all of these kind of things kind of happening and all these kind of interesting new characters kind of pop up and have their own kind of storylines and lead their own kind of rich lives. I would easily recommend this to somebody who enjoys that, because it's like grown up for grown ups in a similar way, you know.
I think it's akin to Broad City in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
where it's like our life is a mess, but that's okay because we're just gonna stubborn our way through everything and hope it works out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think if you lean on the relationships, on like the messiness of the main character, there's a bunch of different ways you could pitch it to people, actually.
I think if my expectations had been different going into this volume, if I had not been like, it's like fucking Poochie, when do they get to the fireworks factory? They don't get to the fireworks factory. They just never fucking get to the fireworks factory. And it's like, okay, if it had been like, we're going to go on a journey, Yeah, I was very concerned with the destination, maybe, and not as much with the journey. And I wish that I had a chance to read this a second time before the podcast today. I think maybe I actually, just before we started, I started reading the first chapter again, and the first chapter works a lot better for me, having gotten to the end already and started over again. So I think it's just a case of expectations getting in the way of what was actually there for me as a reader. But I also kind of assumed that it would be the same for everybody. So that's interesting that you all are you must be really going into this with an open mind, Chip.
I go into everything with an open mind, Chris. just who I am.
Got one last question before the break, which is a manga-splaining tradition at this point. The only color page we've got this time is the cover. What did you think about the cover art and sort of the execution on that? Because we had interesting comments on Otomo, Takahashi, and Helter Skelter.
I think it's probably the best one that we've had so far. Like in terms of like kind of engaging the audience. Yeah, it's well designed. I love her kind of yelling at us.
Yeah.
Well, the word balloons are unique to the English version.
Really?
In the Japanese version, there's no word balloons on the cover. It's just her yelling.
even if there wasn't, I'd still like it.
Yeah. I think they did it just to kind of give readers a flavor of what's going on.
Oh, weird. The solicitation cover for the first English volume doesn't have the word balloons on it either. They must have added it really late in the game. That's interesting. Mm.
It's if you look at, so I have the Kindle edition that I've been reading, and the word balloons are on the thumbnail, but not in the actual book.
Weird.
Oh, okay.
So I suspect, like from, you know, like having to write cover copy and things like that, it was definitely updated at a later date where they were like, we got to explain what this book is about to people.
I didn't even notice the turtle on the front.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Like, it's such a good motif. And the turtle doesn't show up till like 100 pages in.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice the turtle.
is that why you were upset, Chris? Like, you saw the turtle and you were like, where's the turtle for 100
pages?
When's
the turtle coming? But then I was so delighted when the turtle got there that I was on board, right?
Yeah.
So I think I like this a lot. I've always liked his color stuff. It's subdued in a good way. I think the cover design's really good, too. They've taken the Japanese style of the cover on volume one and really run with it in a good way. That's the thing. I wish I had been like, I don't know. I'm going to give volume two a shot. Check in with me next episode, I guess. But I do want to give volume two a shot and see where it goes. Cause I actually really like these kinds of stories usually. And I don't know what it was. Well, I think I know what it was. I talked enough about it.
Yeah. We forgive you, Chris. It's okay.
Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
I know we don't want to, like, you know, stay on this too long, but, you know, just looking at the cover and then going back to the first pages, that first double page spread of him looking out the window and the crying woman, who's probably the actress, I just pieced it together now that that's the actress, like the way she's dressed. And the face. Oh. It's such a gorgeous spread. It's so well drawn. It's so well designed. And it like that sucked me in right away. Like I would have
shadows.
I had no problem with reading the whole book based on just that image.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Can I be really nitpicky for one sec though?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The binding on this, the art is so close to, you guys all have digital or do you, Deb, have you got
digital?
Digital.
On the physical, the binding is so tight and the art goes so close to the gutters that I actually lost some stuff in the gutters at certain points. It was actually hard to read. So Kodansha, if you're listening, please give us another eighth of an inch on the interior gutters if you can. I lost like actual text at one point. I was like, this is crazy. Anything that bleeds right, anything that bleeds into the gutter is like lost. But I imagine reading digital. Maybe I'll switch to. I'll do one digital.
Everything in the gutter is like we can see it here, and you can't. It's all turtles. It's all tiny.
It's just turtles.
Yeah, it's wild.
Oh shit!
It's like a turtle party. Awesome.
Turtle party. It is a dense read. It's got a lot of text in there. So
yeah.
Mm.
Cool.
Not bleach.
No, we'll get to that one. And welcome back to Manga Splaining, the number 11 manga podcast on iTunes right now or something like that.
In Canada under the subsection books.
Nice. We are killing it.
We're killing it.
I didn't mention it at the top of the cast, but we just announced that Manga Splaining is a thing after working in secret for a couple of months. So it's pretty exciting to have everything out. And we've got a cool lineup of books coming in over the next few weeks. First up, we have Yotsuba And by, is it Kiyohiko Azuma, Deb?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What can you tell us about Yotsuba?
Yotsuba is kind of a gentle slice of life comedy. It's about it's ostensibly a seinen manga. It's created for adult readers, but it's kind of an all ages comic. It's about a young girl. She's like maybe preschool. She has green hair, and she moves to a new town with her dad. And Yotsuba, it's called Yotsuba And, or because it's Yotsuba And whatever she encounters that day. So she has all kinds of interesting adventures. She meets the neighbor girls, and it's just a super funny series. It's beautifully drawn. His comic timing is incredible. And it just gets better and better as it goes on. But it's also very episodic. There's not really an overarching story arc. It's just kind of like Yotsuba's adventures.
Yeah.
So I'd say if it's not 180, it's about a 90 degree turn from this week's.
It's very innocent.
It's also very funny though. I got to say it is similarly jokes.
Yeah. So
it's yours. It's 7 Billion Needles, right?
Yeah, this is an old favorite of mine from when I was writing about comics. It was published by Vertical at the time. I believe it's by Kodansha now, or maybe like a co-pub. But it's an adaptation, a very loose adaptation of a sci-fi story that was, I believe, just called Needle by Hal Clement from 1950. And it stars a young lady named Hikaru. She's like a reclusive teenage girl, like she doesn't have many friends. And then she explodes one day and then wakes up reconstituted because of nano machines, sci-fi, whatever. And she learns that there's basically a space cop inside of her. And then things get weird. But when I first read it, I was really struck by the art was really interesting. The aesthetic was really cool. And it really took a sci-fi story in a new direction. And the setting, I don't know, it was really fascinating to me. So I'm looking forward to rereading it for the first time in probably 10 years. Whenever it came out.
Right.
Chris, you've got our ninth episode, Tech on Concrete,
which I did not actually say what it was about last time we talked about it and picked it on the episode, is about two boys who live in this area of town. It's based on a real place in Osaka, in the south of Osaka, called Treasure Town. And they are a gang of two. They're both, preteens that are hyper violent, and they beat up the other gangs in town, sort of terrorizing the town, but also think that they're the city's protectors in a sort of weird twist on maybe superheroes, but also some other darker stuff. And one day a bigger gang comes to town is what you need to know, and how they deal with that and the place that they live and the lives that they've lived up to that point is all thrown into jeopardy, thrown out the window. And it's a really good. It's a standalone volume. It was originally published as three volumes as Black and White back in the day. And now it is released as one volume called Tech on Concrete Black and White, available digital and print from Viz Media.
Chris, that was an excellent description of that story.
I learned from the best. Deb, David, thank you.
We're trying. What I love about your description is that whatever art style Chip is imagining for that story, it's definitely going to be wrong.
Yeah. It's great.
All right.
Yeah, it's exciting. I do want to throw Chip a curveball, then we can maybe think about some shout outs. So this is our sixth episode. You've read about 1,000, maybe 1,200 pages of manga at this point. What do you think, dude? Manga? yay or nay?
Definitely yay. I've really enjoyed the diversity of stories. Like everything that you guys have picked so far and curated has been, they've all been wildly different from each other and engaging in totally different ways. also just a variety of styles too, which is the one thing that I wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. For some reason in my head, like manga was two styles.
Like,
you know,
porn and not porn.
Basically like Sailor Moon and Lone Wolf and Cub. Like those were the kind of the two things in my head. And I would just kind of lump things into those categories, even having, you know, read like some Rama when I was a kid. I'm like, oh yeah, that's kind of Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
And it's on that end of the spectrum.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, and you know, you mentioned Blade of the Immortal. Like I have a vague, you know, idea of what it looks like. And it's Lone Wolf and Cub. Like those are the two things. And so far, all these titles have been so different from each other artistically and with what they're trying to do with the stories and the genres they're playing with that I'm super fascinated. And like, I'm excited. I'm actually genuinely excited to see where this podcast goes. And to see how powerful I'm going to become by the end.
You'll be like the Oprah for manga.
Oh, man.
That's all I could have ever hoped for.
I'm really glad to hear that because, like, obviously, you know, doing a podcast with friends is fun. You know, we've been to Japan and hung out a lot together. But also, like, talking about books, like something that we all enjoy, I feel like elevates it a little bit. So even though it's sort of like, let's throw Chip a curveball and see if he hates this book, it's also like, let's see what he thinks about this book.
Yeah.
Because we care about you, Chip.
Thank you. And I'm learning about myself as a storyteller, too. Like, I think... I mean, hopefully some of this seeps into my day-to-day work as well. And, mm-hmm. and you know, all of you have either worked in manga or work in manga, so I feel like even just revisiting these is going to affect how you all approach your work as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially talking about translation with someone who's not super versed in manga translation.
Yeah.
Because there's always, not necessarily like blind spots, but there's things that you accept because it's part of the genre for you because, you know, you... grew up in it, like the frog in the boiling water metaphor.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of like when my mom saw X-Men comics as a kid and was like, why are these so sexist? And I was like, what are you talking about? Yeah. And then I grew up and I was like, oh man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I had the same discussion with my mom after, why are these balloons with made up of a bunch of different bubbles?
Yeah.
Like she's like, you just don't even have it in your mind that like there's a visual language that we just grew up with that maybe your parents never had.
Awesome.
The J. Lee Zealot character cover to Wildcats Trilogy number 2 almost made my mom forbid me from buying comics anymore. And I was like secretly gay. I wasn't even I like J. Lee's art a lot. I didn't want it for the bondage metal bikini cover that J. Lee had put on that. But yeah, I had to have that conversation. Like, mom, that is not why I'm reading it. It's just the stories. It's just they put that on the cover to make it sell. It's not what it's about.
I like, read Playboy for the articles.
I can't believe you had that conversation with your mom.
My mom was furious, actually. She's like, what are you reading? And it was so shiny.
Anyway, yeah.
We've all had the zealot conversation with our mothers.
Cool. Does anyone have shout-outs this week?
Yeah, I actually wanted to, I don't know if you've noticed, I've got a real microphone this week. It's thanks to my friends at The Beguiling and my friend Mike Stafford, who was supposed to send me a link to shout out, but didn't. But it's for his vinyl Instagram something situation. He's got extra equipment, so now I've got a thing. So thanks, Mike. I appreciate it. Hopefully this improves the sound of my voice. And I will put it in the show notes, actually, to thank him for it.
I should, you know, since you're shouting out your friends, I should probably also shout out my friends Ben and Tommy, the band DADS.
Yeah,
doing our theme song as well. You can check out their stuff on Spotify and other places where you get your music.
My shout out is near and dear to the podcast because Daredevil Volume 5 Truth/Dare. Written by our Chip Zdarsky came out today. I read the first chapter. Pretty good start. We'll see how it finishes.
All right,
but I like the series. I like the book. Yeah.
I was just going to say, because I've been holding off on posting any spoilers on Twitter or in my newsletter because of you specifically.
Really?
Because I know you read it in trade. So whenever there's like a new variant cover with like my big issue 25 reveal, I have not posted it on Twitter. Like, I have not.
I'm so flattered right now.
You're such a sweetheart.
I know. I just, like, I knew you were reading it in trades. I didn't want to ruin it for you because I knew because you posted something where you're like, oh, I haven't seen it. I'm like, oh, good. Okay. Yeah. All right.
I have an idea who it involves that I can guess, but I don't know what happens or how.
Okay, great.
Which awesome. Is a good place like to come into a comic book with, I think, because I'm like, okay, yeah. like let's see if this guy sticks the landing.
Yeah.
So you might get an angry email from me in 2 hours.
All right, great. Perfect. I look forward to it.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to our 6th episode of Manga Splaining. If it's the 7th, I'll fix that in editing. We talked about Hiroaki Samura's Wave Listen to Me, translated by Adam Hirsch, lettered by Darren Smith, edited by Alexandra Swanson for Kodansha Publishing. And on behalf of Chip, Chris, and Deb, we'll see you next week. And thank you for listening. This has been Manga Splaining Episode 6. Thank you for listening. For our next episode, we'll be discussing the manga Yatsuba Ann by Kiyohiko Azuma. Want to pick up a copy? Consider supporting your local comic book and manga specialty shop. Find one near you at comicshoplocator.com. You can also follow along with our complete reading list at mangasplaining.com. Thanks to DADS for their musical accompaniment this episode.